All right. So, Thiago, is it actually possible for English learners to remember everything that they're learning in English?
Maybe that's not really the problem. Like, it's not like you are forgetting words. It's not about remembering per se, but about maybe moving or transferring some words and expressions you want into your active vocabulary box so you can start using them more often.
Aw, yeah, Systems of the World. This is Ethan from Real Life English, where every single week it is our mission to take you beyond the classroom to speak English naturally and confidently, connect to the world, and actually use your English as the doorway to living your greatest dreams. I'm joined here in the Cross Atlantic studio by my Brazilian counterpart, Thiago. How's it going, man?
Hey, Ethan. How's it going? I'm doing well, man. Hey, everybody. Ethan, what did you say there? Did you say my Brazilian counterpart? What's that?
Counterpart. Counterpart is a complementary piece to something.
All right. It's a good word. Counterpart or counterpart, and right?
Counterpart with the connected speech because it's an NT, right? Counter.
Yeah.
Counterpart.
Yeah. Everything's okay here, man. To share some news with you guys, my daughter has recently turned 2 last weekend. Ooh. And we had a little party celebration there. It was nice. Yeah.
I'll teach you an expression, I don't know if you've heard this before in English, called the terrible twos.
I know very well about those. I think she's already in that phase, actually, you know.
So enlighten our listeners, viewers, what does that mean? The terrible twos.
Yeah, the terrible twos is what we call this phase in a child's life, around 2 years old, where it's like the adolescence of toddlers or children, because, you know, they start developing their own personality already. They realize that they are their own person, you know, and they start, you know, questioning you already, you know, they start like, you know, yelling or, you know, rolling on the floor and throwing tantrums, as we say.
Oh yeah. What's a tantrum?
Yeah. It's like, you know, imagine when you go to the supermarket and then you see like a child, you know, screaming and yelling and rolling on the floor. That child is throwing a tantrum and probably making the parents embarrassed a little bit.
Go crazy for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, my daughter is already in that phase. Yeah.
Well, good luck. Good luck.
Thank you. You know, I was reflecting in preparation for today's podcast. I was reflecting on my English learning journey, my English as it is today, my English level as it is today. And I realized that when it comes to vocabulary, I don't necessarily use all the words that I actually know. Like on my day-to-day routine for work, here to record the podcast, to teach a class, you know, it's almost like I know a bunch of words and expressions, yes, but I don't necessarily use all of them. And then I remember this concept called active vocabulary versus passive vocabulary. And it is a thing. In my brain, I like to compartmentalize things. So it's almost like I have 2 boxes in my brain, you know. In one box, you know, I have the passive vocabulary there, which is quite large. And it's all the words, expressions that I actually know and understand. If I see them in a movie, somebody using them, I recognize them. But I don't necessarily use them when I speak English, when I write in English, like on my day-to-day life. And then I have the second box, which is the active vocabulary box. It's a bit smaller, and those are the words and expressions that I actually use more frequently in my day-to-day life. So I think when we talk about this topic of forgetting the things you learn in English, or forgetting the words in this case, maybe that's not really the problem. Like, it's not like you are forgetting words, because, you know, for you guys out there, if you are at an intermediate, upper intermediate level, chances are you already have a very good base knowledge of English, vocab and expressions, everything. But maybe the problem is that's all part of our passive vocabulary, not active vocabulary. That's why when you see us here in the podcast using a word or expression, you understand. When you watch a movie or a series, you understand, you know, that word, that phrase. But when it's time for you to speak English, for example, you don't necessarily use that. So why? Because, you know, that word might not be part of your active vocabulary.
I think something else that's important to note here is it's not something that you should have hard feelings about. If something that you learned, it's still in that passive vocabulary box. Because even this happens in our native languages. I know for me, even an English speaker, all of the, I know tons and tons of words in English compared to any other language I've learned, just because the sheer amount of years that I've been having exposure to this language, right, as a native speaker. That said, though, there I have a lot of passive vocabulary in English, and, you know, listener or you know, any of you that are listening or watching us right now, if you actually pay attention, I recommend even trying this out. Next time you're reading a more advanced piece of literature in your native language, or maybe reading a news article, anything that tends to have more obscure or less commonly used language from your native language in it, pay attention and see if there's any words that stand out to you as the kind of words that you understand what that means, whether it's because you've learned that word at some point or just through the context you're understanding it. And actually reflect for just a couple seconds, would I be able to bring that up in my speaking? Would that word come to me naturally if I was having a conversation with a friend, or even if I was giving a presentation or speaking with someone at work in a more formal setting? And I think that you'll find that there's tons of words like this even in your native language. This happens to me now that I'm aware of it. It happens to me all the time that I'll be in a meeting and there's a word that's, we will say, it's on the tip of my tongue. Like I know it's there in my brain. It's just, I can't produce it in that moment because it's not in my active vocabulary box, at least in that moment. Again, like, don't beat yourself up about this. I know that there's certain people I admire who are English speakers, native English speakers, that have just this really broad, like, beautiful use of the language that I don't have, because probably in part because I speak a lot of other languages. So my capacity to have many words at my disposal, a lot of that has gone to Catalan, Spanish, Portuguese, and so on. And maybe there's only so much space in our heads. And so, like, you know, you as having English as your second language, especially, you shouldn't be beating yourself up about this.
I really like what you're saying, especially about not beating yourself up about this, because yes, it's totally fine for you to have maybe a larger passive vocabulary box, let's say, a bigger one, and not necessarily use those words actively. I do want to backtrack a little bit, Ethan, because you used some nice pieces of vocab here. So first of all, you said you shouldn't have hard feelings about this. What does it mean when you have hard feelings about something?
We don't normally actually say, like, I have hard feelings about something, just so people know. It's usually used in the negative of, like, no hard feelings, which might be used in a sense if you're wanting to, you know, encourage someone because something bad happened, or maybe you gave them a constructive piece of feedback or something like that. Like, you know, if I'm correcting your English, I say, you know, no hard feelings. You're still a learner. No worries. So it's basically saying, like, don't feel bad about it. Don't beat yourself up about it. It's another way to say that.
Nice. No hard feelings, we say, right? That's the the proper collocation.
The collocation, right?
Nice. And you also use the word sheer, the sheer amount of words, I guess. What's that, the sheer amount?
Sheer, when you say a sheer amount of something, it just means a uncountable amount of something. It's a very tremendous amount of something.
Just to comment on what you said last about maybe having a more limited, you know, vocabulary, because, you know, you speak other languages. That actually reminded me of an interview that I saw years ago. It was this Canadian TV program where the host was interviewing, I think, three university professors, Canadian ones, that deal with linguistics and bilingualism, you know, that topic. And one of the professors actually say that kids who are bilingual, they tend to have more limited vocabulary than their counterpart, to use that word again, that just speak one language. Because it makes sense that you are distributing across your brain power and energy for more than one language, not just one language. So at least at first, a monolingual child tends to have a wider array of vocab at their disposal than a bilingual one. But that's not necessarily a problem.
That's interesting. It's something I've observed here, because everyone pretty much here is bilingual in Spanish and Catalan. And it's interesting because people, it depends too. Like, if your mother tongue being like it's literally the language that your mother or your mother and father taught you. So something I've recognized here in friends and so on is that depending on the mother tongue that they had at home, which for some people it will be both, but for a lot of people it was Spanish or Catalan they learned first. And then when they're like 4 or 5 years old, they go to school and they learn the other one. So they're still bilingual. They're still learning it as a child. But there's always certain things that come for them more naturally in their mother tongue. And the other thing is that there can be a certain topic or a certain set of words that a person knows in one of the languages and not the other, just because of being exposed in a certain situation to that set of vocabulary and not knowing it in a counterpart. Like, for example, with my partner, like, he will know fruits and vegetables, for example, like anything in the kitchen that he learned in Catalan, but he doesn't know a lot of them in Spanish. So this can just lead to kind of funny situations. A person say, how do you say it, like, that word in Spanish, even though they're a native speaker?
Amazing.
So, you know, I think there's hope for all of us when when I see this kind of thing.
There's still hope. I like that. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what we wanted to do today, to not just talk about the phenomenon of learning and remembering and forgetting and activating and having more passive vocabulary and so on, is to actually give you guys a strategy that you can use to start activating more of that passive vocabulary so that you have it at your disposal when you need it. So we're going to actually go through this using our methodology called the Real Life Way. Thiago and I did a really nice episode of the podcast where we went all over how you can use the Real Life Way to become a fluent, natural English speaker. So we won't go too into depth about all the specifics here, but highly recommend, if you've not yet listened or watched that episode, you should definitely check it out. But we have the three components of the Real Life Way are connect it, live it, and activate it. So we're going to go through each one of those components and look at how can you apply this to activating that vocabulary that you have in your head. So first of all, connect it has to do with connecting to your why, for your deeper purpose of learning the language, and with your identity. So first of all, talking about purpose, I would even just sit down for a minute or two, or you could even pause this episode and just write down really quickly, why do you actually need to expand your vocabulary? Why do you need to activate your vocabulary? It seems like something really, really simple, really mundane, but actually doing this can help you to stay motivated when you get in those periods, because learning vocabulary can be very challenging. It's not always something that's super fun to do. It requires studying and so on. So knowing and being able to come back to, why am I doing this? Why is this important for me? How is this going to help me in my life? Or, as we like to say, be the doorway to living my dreams. You know, connecting back to that will push you through the tedium of needing to study long lists of vocabulary or you know, studying the vocabulary that you're learning, which will come back to in your everyday experiences.
I like the word you use there, mundane. It's a great advanced word. Mm-hmm. What is something mundane?
That was one I was trying to think of it. It was one of those ones I had on the tip of my tongue, and I wasn't sure if it was going to come to me. I wasn't sure if it was accurate.
It came out.
It came out. That's one of those things, though. It's a great expression. It's on the tip of my tongue. So if something is mundane, it means it actually comes from the Latin word for world, which is, I'm not sure actually what it is, but it's probably similar in Spanish, like mundo, meaning having to do with the earth. So we tend to use this as something that's earthly, or it's not something that's out in space. It's not something out of this world, right? It's something simple here, familiar, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
And to complement what you were talking about, related to connecting it, right, to your identity and to your purpose, speaking of identity, that is very true, because if you connect your English to who you are and to what your interests are, that will naturally guide you to what kinds of words or vocabulary you need to learn, you know, or you mm-hmm. want to learn. In my case, for example, I love music. I have my guitar here in my back, as you guys can see, right? Those of you on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So for me, as a musician, it makes perfect sense to learn how to name the parts of the guitar. So for me, it makes sense to learn words like headstock, strings, neck, you know, pickups and knobs and body, you know?
There's a lot of those words I don't even know.
Yeah, fretboard, you know? Why? Because I play music. It's part of who I am, you see? But maybe for somebody else who is not very much into music or who doesn't play any instrument, why would you learn that? So yeah, connecting your English to your identity and to your interests, it's crucial.
We might, by the way, call that jargon, which is like a set of vocabulary that has to do with a certain profession or a certain, for example, you know, music. That's some of the words you were saying there, are musical jargon. One of the things I actually took note of, for example, is exactly what you're saying is that it's good to reflect on your identity to know what sort of vocabulary should I learn. And for Thiago, it makes perfect sense. Maybe with his English, he wants to connect with other musicians. but as valuable is to also think about what kind of things do I not need to focus on, and so I shouldn't feel bad that that vocabulary is just in my passive vocabulary, or I don't know that vocabulary yet. You know, even for me as a native speaker, like legal jargon, legal vocabulary, I like some different series and stuff that are about legal things, but they'll use vocabulary that I don't really know. I have a sense of what it means just because I've heard it in different moments of my life. My dad's a lawyer, so you know, I've at some point I've heard these things, but it's not important that I have those in my active vocabulary. Hopefully I don't get into a situation where that becomes necessary, but for the most part, I'm hoping in my life that's not going to be so necessary in English or other languages that I'm learning. Now, if you're a lawyer, or if you're studying law, or if it's something that really fascinates you, you might be more interested in spending the time that is necessary to learn that kind of vocabulary. I think too, just to add on this before we move on, it can be really valuable too to think about specific situations. Let's take, for example, that you're going to be interviewing for a job and you're really excited about this job and it's a company that works in, you know, something having to do with the environment. And you realize, you know, I don't really have a lot of vocabulary to talk about the environment. And so you might start considering, you know, how can I attain more vocabulary that has to do with the environment so that when I'm in this interview and they ask me different questions about, you know, why do you want to work here? What do you like about the company and so on, that you can give a competent answer using the words that you really need to have to be able to talk about that at a high level. So, you know, you might start listening to some podcasts that are on environmental topics. You might watch a documentary. You might have a conversation even on the Real Life English app and try to, you know, just use some of these new words that you're learning, maybe teach it to other people, which can be a really great way to learn. But that's a really great way to make sure that you're exposing yourself to this vocabulary and then you're activating that vocabulary by speaking with other people, by writing down example sentences, by using some different tools, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yeah, it's about making it relevant for yourself. Yeah. And you've already started touching on living it, right? Which is the next component we have here for our method. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, you know, watching maybe videos about that topic you are trying to learn more words about, or listening to a podcast about it, right?
And I think a really important thing here, so, you know, we say live it is make it fun, natural, convenient, and everyday. So the really important thing here is, say you're not living in an English country, or even if you are living in an English speaking country, because I've had students who live in the United States, for example, but they're still, you know, they have a family from their home country. They're really struggling to make local friends. They're struggling to really immerse themselves because at home they're speaking in their native language. So it might still be relevant for you. You really need to build habits that make it effortless for you to have this immersion experience. So it's every single minute possible of your day, you need to be listening to things in English, listening or watching things in English. And the great thing here is that this is the most fun part of learning, because it's reflecting on the things that, what are the things that I already love? Maybe it's watching TV series, maybe it's reading novels, maybe it's listening to podcasts, whatever that is, and then finding things that you can do in the target language, in English in this case. So, you know, you make it effortless by, you know, fun, natural, and convenient by thinking about things that you can do that you already love, but in English. And it makes it really easy to make it a habit too, because you look forward to these things. You look forward to watching your new favorite TV series. You look forward to listening to a podcast while you're working out and so on. So we've done a lot of other lessons too about habit building and how you do this and so on that we can link in the description or in the show notes. But doing those two things, it's going to be immensely valuable when we come to talk about vocabulary, because you know, you can specify this about something you want to learn, or you can just make sure you're doing it all the time. But you're going to ensure that whether or not you're deliberately learning those new words, you're going to be encountering new words all the time, right?
If you do that, some words will naturally make their way into your active vocabulary. Some words are easier mm-hmm. for you to learn and pick up. And other words are a little bit harder. You need maybe to, you know, think about them more often or see them more often. But in any case, it's a great way for you to improve vocab. If you're not consuming content in English daily yet, start doing that.
And even if you're already doing it, think of like, how can I do that even more?
Exactly.
It's always like something you should be saying, how can I maximize my exposure throughout the day?
Yeah, that's so true.
So the last part is activating it. So, you know, we've talked about maybe the more philosophical parts. We talked about the more fun parts. So let's talk about the more getting our hands dirty and actually doing the difficult work that comes to really, if you're really serious about getting to advanced levels in the language, you have to do this. With what we were just talking about having a lot of passive exposure to the language all the time, something that can be really important, just to like a first small step in activating, is keeping a notepad. Whether that's, if you're old fashioned, you prefer to have a small notepad in your pocket. This is what I used to do back in the day before smartphones. Or, you know, if you love doing everything on your phone, then just using whatever app that you use. But having some way that you can always take notes. So you're watching a TV series, you're listening to a podcast, there's an interesting new word or expression that you hear or see, and you can take note of it right in that moment. And then, at least what I used to do, I can kind of like share you the strategy when I was more actively learning languages. What I used to do once per day is I'd go to like my notepad and transfer that new vocabulary that I captured. So it's really important, look it up in a dictionary. So don't use a translator. Don't just translate to your language, because your goal probably is to start thinking in English and not having to translate in your head. So to do this, always try to understand the dictionary definition of the word, and use the word and then, you know, the definition to remember this. And then the other things you can do, this all depends too on how much time that you have, which, you know, when I was younger, I had much more time to do these things. Now I would do a simpler approach. But if you can use images, if you can use sound, if you can use anything else that's going to give more hooks into your brain, into your memory. So something you could even try, if you're a little bit artistic, or, you know, you're not afraid of getting your hands dirty, then, you know, draw a picture. Draw your very own picture for like what this makes you, this new word, this new expression makes you think of. Even, you know, use the sentence of where you heard it, or look up other example sentences. Something I used to do was when you go on Google search, you can click on news and you can search there for a word, for an expression, and it'll bring up news stories that are using that. So you can take like real life examples, which is really nice. And then finally, we talked, you know, I mentioned that we would share a tool that's really useful for this, and it's called spaced repetition software. I used to use Anki, Memrise on iPhone, because the Anki app is super expensive. I used one called Flashcards Deluxe, which is pretty much the same thing. And these technologies are amazing because they're basically set up to work in the same way that your brain retains new information. And that basically is that when we first hear something, or we first learn a new word, we're going to forget it almost instantly. Like, you need to see that again a lot at the beginning. You need to see it in 5 minutes and then a few hours later for it to start making those hooks in your brain. But then it starts becoming more into your midterm, into your long-term memory. So, you know, it can be a few days before you see it again, and it'll still stay in your active vocabulary. And then, you know, days turn into weeks, turn into months, turn into, you know, you're never going to forget that word. So using something like this, deliberately make sure that you are moving it from that passive vocabulary, well, really moving it from a word you don't know to your passive vocabulary to your active vocabulary. It's obviously like something that you have to do deliberately, and especially all the work that goes into putting things in there. But, you know, we have 5 minutes all the time. This is, you know, something I do like anytime I'm waiting in line somewhere, I'm having to, you know, go on the bus somewhere, I would whip out my phone and for 5 minutes be studying my vocabulary. So, you know, it's pretty simple. Now, this is a lot of work. So what I would highly recommend is, we've made it a lot easier for you with the Real Life English app, because we give you the most important vocabulary, expressions, and anything else that we think is important for you to add to your active vocabulary for each lesson. And we have our own spaced repetition software in the app. So, you know, you don't have to do any of the work of looking for the definition, of adding in an audio file of how you're supposed to correctly pronounce that, of looking for the images. We do all of the dirty work for you. So you definitely should check that out if you have not yet. And that said, maybe we could just take a break really quickly and give a shout out to one of our special listeners.
All right, this one goes to Kumar. And Kumar says, this app is really different from other English learning apps. I've been using this app for some days only, but this app makes me feel better and it helps me overcome my shyness. It is a great platform to learn English.
Yeah, thanks so much, Kumar. So we just talked about the vocabulary part of the app, but there are so many other features. For example, that you can be practicing your speaking every single day. That's another really important thing for activating. This is something that anytime I learn a new word, I have the benefit of living in a country where, you know, if I learn a word in Catalan, I can use it pretty instantly. But try to use it as soon as possible after you learn it. And we've given you a really convenient resource where anytime, anywhere, you just press a button and you can instantly start a conversation in English. So be sure to check that out if you haven't already. And we look forward to seeing you there. So I know I hear a lot from learners, usually when they talk about forgetting things, it might be in the context of, for example, they get in a conversation and they just feel like they've learned all these words and they're not available to them, or they learned a new expression and they have an opportunity to use it, but then it doesn't come to their mind when they really need it. But, you know, we've talked a lot about these kind of things, but that's not the only time where people will forget things. Oftentimes too, we study for hours different grammar rules, right? And then it comes time to use it and, you know, we're doubting about, you know, actually, I don't know right now which tense I should use. So, you know, what would you say about how can learners better remember certain grammar rules when it comes time to speak? Mm-hmm.
There is something called fossilized mistakes, we call it, which is basically a mistake that a learner has spent so much time making that it kind of becomes natural for that person to speak it wrong, you know? And those mistakes are really hard to fix because they have become fossilized. The person has been making them for so long that, you know, it's really hard to fix that. So again, bringing self-awareness to the discussion, it's important that you become self-aware or aware of what those fossilized mistakes are. What are those little mistakes that you always make every time you speak English or every time you write in English? I find that having a teacher in that case could be beneficial because, you know, a teacher or a more experienced friend who knows more English than you could listen to you and give you some feedback and kind of diagnose, you know, what the weak areas are or what that mistake is, so you become aware of it. This is very useful. But you can also do that self-reflection on your own, all right? You can record yourself, listen to yourself. Once you become aware of that, I would say repetition is crucial. You got to repeat the right way over and over and over again. It reminds me of a student of mine. She used to make this mistake that is really common among Brazilian learners. She used to say, it depends of. It depends of, the preposition of there. Because for us in Portuguese, it makes more sense to use of in Portuguese. But in English, we don't say it depends of. We say it depends on. That's the right preposition there. It depends on. So first of all, I pointed that out to her. So you see the self-awareness there, like, oh, we identify that. And then throughout the week, she would work on that by herself, like, you know, repeating, it depends on, it depends on, it depends on. She would write sentences with, it depends on, it depends on. And then every class we had after that for a while, whenever she was speaking and she would say sometimes, it depends of, you see the fossilized mistake kicking in there, I would just do this. I would just signal to her, like, oh, you know, like something happened there, something, you know. And then she would immediately become aware again, oh yeah, it depends on. It's that work of repetition. First, you identify what that is, and man, you spend some time repeating that. I guarantee that if you become aware of that fossilized mistake, you know, and you think about it every day, and you are always being reminded of it every day for, let's say, a month, by the end of the month, you should, you know, you should be able to fix it already. If not a month, do it for another month, yeah, 2 months, you know. But if you do that, it's almost inevitable that you will fix that. But you see, it has to be deliberate. That's the point, yeah? It cannot be something sporadic, like, you know, you do it every once in a while.
For me, it almost makes me think about when you're rewriting a file, you know, on a computer. If we think of our brains like a computer, it's like you're having to rewrite that file. And obviously on a computer, it's a lot easier than it is in our brain. It requires many, many times of going over it until you're able to replace that that fossilized mistake, that pattern that you've created in your head that's wrong. I know, like, I was trying to think, because like now I'm more active. I've started learning Portuguese again, and I'm making these all the time. I like have a friend I'm speaking with a lot, and he'll correct me sometimes. And I know there's like one that I've made a lot of times, and it's like coming out of Spanish, and every time I get that wrong. So like now I'm in this process of like trying to repeat it a lot so that I, you know, stop making that fossilized mistake, but it's not coming to me now. But I also suffered this a lot when I was studying for the C1 in Catalan. I remember, because in Catalan, actually, because it's a bilingual country, this will happen a lot, that there's a lot of barbarisms. So there's a lot of things on the street that people accept as being correct, even though, you know, when you go to take a test, it's not actually correct, because it's an influence from Spanish. And I had a lot of these that I had to relearn, And it was the same thing that I just like would repeat it to myself over and over and over again. And eventually I was able to pick up the right way of saying it. And now it's something that has stuck with me. And it's nice, like, to actually be speaking more correctly than even a lot of native speakers are, which is a funny thing to think about. But yeah.
To bring that word that you used in today's episode again, in that case, it's about the sheer amount of repetition, let's say. You got to beat it in your head, you know, like constantly until you get it right. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, maybe our brains are, they're less like a computer and more like one of the stone tablets that they had to pound, you know, something into to write something.
To engrave it. Yeah,
exactly. But I think exactly what you were saying here, it's going to be really difficult to do this without a teacher. Of course, if you're, you know, if you're aware, as Chao was saying, and you, another one I've heard a lot is that Spanish speakers, for example, will say think in, because it's pensar in Spanish, not, but in English, in fact, it's think about something. Mm-hmm. So they'll make this mistake a lot. Maybe if you're really aware and you see, you're watching a series and you say, they said they're thinking about something, or you're reading something, you say, hey, I also saw here, they say think about. So maybe it's not, think in might not be correct. If you have a really good awareness there, then maybe you'll be able to pick out on those. But most of us humans have a lot of difficulty actually perceiving this with many different things. You can get it with some things, but that's really where, if you're serious about getting to an advanced level, sooner or later, it's really helpful to have a teacher or a friend who has a more advanced level than you, or as a native, that can help to point out these fossilized mistakes that you're making.
And the beautiful thing about this is that it also applies to pronunciation, the fossilized mistake that you always mispronounce a word, or you never get that sound right, even though you have already learned it, right? Mm-hmm. The same thing applies. This applies to vocab, to grammar, and also to pronunciation, yeah? So when you learn we teach connected speech all the time in our content. So focus on one specific connected speech pattern there, and man, spend 1 or 2 months repeating, you know, words with that sound or phrases with that sound every day until you start internalizing it. The same principle.
Oh, yeah. So now we have today's big challenge.
The big challenge today. Let's practice internalizing new words by exposure. So you will listen to this short podcast episode. The link will be in the description or in the show notes. As you're listening, whenever you hear a more advanced word or expression or something that you want to internalize that catches your attention, you will write it down. At the end, you should review your list and try to create one example sentence using each expression. By simply doing that, you'll be already activating those words by bringing them into your active vocabulary. So just to recap here, listen to the podcast that we're going to link it here. Take notes of vocab or words that catch your attention, and then make a list of example sentences with those words, all right? Once you're done, share your list with us with a comment on YouTube. If you're on YouTube, you can also send us an email if you prefer at hello@reallifeglobal.com. And if you prefer, you can also send us a voice message reading your example sentences with the words you chose, all right? Just remember to keep it short. All the links will be in the description or in the show notes for you to do this challenge, all right?
Oh, yeah. So let's look at some of the responses from one of our recent big challenges. So on episode 350, we asked, what do you think that actually fulfills you in life? All right. And Thiago, we have an email here from one of our fans in France, Killian. Do you want to do the honors of reading that?
Yeah, sure. So we got this very nice email here from Killian. And the email goes, hi, my name is Killian. I am from France. I take pleasure in watching your YouTube channel, whether it's Real Life English or Learn English with TV series. And I also like listening to your podcast on Spotify. 2 years ago, I decided to quit university to learn English through a special program. Now I am at B2 level. And at the end of the year, I'm going to London for 3 months. And I'm very proud of myself. As you've probably guessed, learning English is more than a hobby. It's a real passion. I've been learning English almost every day for 2 years now, and I still love that. By the way, I've learned a word from you guys that fits well with me, logophile. Today, I don't know about my future yet, but I just want to be happy learning English again and again abroad, if it's possible. Nowadays, people want to be happy with money, luxury, or whatever, but I think we just need to find something we like. So far, I've never been tired of learning English because I do that with love. Thank you for your positivity, and I wish you all the best in the future. Best regards, Killian.
Thanks so much, Killian. What is a logophile?
That's a person who is in love with words, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love of words, love of language even. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Killian, again, thanks so much for taking the time to write that email. It's really like heartwarming to get to read how we've affected your life, your learning, and keep up the good work.
And we also got a nice audio message on SpeakPipe by Nedra from Tunisia, and she talks about something that fulfills her.
Hello, Real Life English. I am Nedra from Tunisia. I live in Spain since 2020. My life fulfillment is my movie. The screenplay started in March 2020. I wrote it entirely in French. Now I am translated into Spanish. Besides the fact that I am studying something completely different, I start my day early to work on my screenplay. My ultimate goal is to finish this work, to find the producer, and to bring the film to life. Thank you, Real Life English.
It was really amazing to hear that, Nedra. Thanks so much for taking the time to send us your recording. And it's really great. Like, you're a total polyglot, because I believe in Tunisia, you speak French and also Arabic, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, living in Spain, you're speaking Spanish, translating Spanish, and now also learning English. That's absolutely fantastic. And I hope and wish you all the best with your film. So thanks so much for joining us today. Hopefully some of this advice has been useful for you to start activating some of that dormant vocabulary and even all the grammar that you're putting all that hard work into studying, pronunciation, and so much more. And if you want a free way to support us because you're enjoying these lessons, then leave us a 5-star review on wherever you're listening to this. It could be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else that allows you to do that. And, you know, of course, if you're on YouTube, hit that subscribe button and the bell down below because it helps us to reach more people and impact more people's English learning, help them have some of the same progress that you're having with us. And remember, no matter what divides us, that which unites us is far greater. 1, 2, 3. Aww, yeah. Hey again, I hope you enjoyed today's lesson. Don't be a stranger. You can find all the notes like vocabulary, links, and more for this lesson on our blog at reallifeglobal.com. And connect with us and on Instagram at reallife.english for even more fun English recommendations. Do you want to continue your learning and get confident, fluent English? Check out our YouTube channel, Learn English with TV Series, where you can have fun learning to understand fast-speaking natives with your favorite movies, series, and more without getting lost, without missing the jokes, and without subtitles. Finally, if you are enjoying our podcast, then please assist us in helping more people go beyond the classroom and live their English. You can do this by sending a link to this podcast to a friend or by leaving us a 5-star review wherever you are listening. We might even shout you out on the podcast. Stay healthy and safe, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Aw, yeah.